It's Monday today in Fitzroy, and I have a big list of things to do and utterly no chance of getting even halfway through it, let's be honest. Two things I absolutely have to do. One is getting the children out of the godforsaken house for one solitary hour. So far, this has taken a total of 2 hours, and the child-to-underpant ratio is currently 2-1. The second thing I absolutely must deal with is what has come to be known to me and Max and the kids as
cardboard box situation.
An exploding mountain of cardboard boxes teetering in the corner of the lounge room, a shifting shanty town of brand names, carbon dating delivery after delivery brought to our door over the last 6 months.
Hey, we should keep these boxes,
I had said months back.
For our craft projects.
I had pictured back then gentle domestic creativity. A robot, a castle, a slowly crawling city mapped out and painted, a colourful vision reclaiming the lounge room, our imaginations come to life. What now stands is a literal monument to the mortifying gap between my guileless optimism and the crushing reality of domestic life. And may I suggest that if you ever want to be extremely annoyed on a daily basis, do, by all means, erect one of those.
Oh, for the love of God! Holy kids!
The cardboard box situation is infuriating and humiliating and enraging and unending, and hardly helped by endless deliveries. So many deliveries. A cast of thousands delivering parcels and exercise equipment and shoes and...
Hi, Tom! Mum!
G'day, kids. What's this you've got?
We're building a spaceship.
Is that right?
Which bag has muesli bars?
That one. But wait for Mum, eh?
This is our new friend, Tom, who runs the place up the road that used to be a cafe but now delivers our groceries too.
Which part of space are you off to exactly?
Everybody in the neighbourhood knows Tom, and we've somehow stumbled into the habit of treating him like a member of the family. He's been greeted at the door by children dressed in costumes.
Ah, your ladyship, my good lord. Mr. Potter, Hermione. Tinkerbell, Boris Johnson.
And it is quite a gift to appear at someone's front door and not make them self-conscious when they're wearing pyjamas and haven't done their hair. Hi, Tom.
Morning, sunshine. The frozen things are on top there.
Thank you.
Too easy.
Everything for Tom is...
Too easy.
...a kind of aggressively generous brand of laissez-faire that is very hard to resist.
Bye, Tom!
He also brings news sometimes of the wider world.
You enjoy Indian food?
He asks me now. Sure, I say.
A couple who run the little joint on the corner, you know them, Raj and Jay...
I picture the place he's talking about. The woman squatting down with a bowl of boiled lollies for the kids to select from. The man stabbing a calculator to figure out your bill.
Do a great chicken tikka,
he says, and then he shrugs theatrically as though he couldn't possibly influence my decision-making process any more than he already has. Tom is a travelling caravan of local intel, and we both know this isn't so much a suggestion as an instruction to support the struggling local business. I promise him I'll give it a go, and he heads off down the street. Thanks again, Tom! I say, and he bats at the air as though shooing away a fly.
Too easy, mate,
he says. And after I've packed the groceries away, I stand with the new grocery boxes in my hand and look at the cardboard box situation. I quietly admit defeat. Kids, where did you go? Oh, God. Later... Much later, hours that feel like days later, After lunch and the dishes and a sit-down protest at the front door pertaining to the compulsory wearing of socks, the kids and I have squabbled and bickered our way slowly all the way to the Fitzroy Gardens, the closest thing to an exciting excursion I can arrange, and one they have resisted heroically at every turn. We have dawdled and lurched across the mostly empty streets of Fitzroy, which are colourless and depressing today, cleansed of the smell and the noise, the rich and the poor, the conversations, the random shouting. Even the doorways are empty. We see one man on a street corner reaching his hand out towards a dog on a leash.
Yeah, it's a boar doodle.
The woman at the other end of the leash shouts improbably. Crossing Victoria Parade, we wait for a tram containing a driver and a single passenger to sail past us down the hill. And despite their steadfast resistance, as soon as we hit the edge of the park, the kids take off. The vastness of the space before them, recalibrating their sense of themselves in the universe as their scooters hurtle at speed down the hill. I follow them down the central path, neat rows of daffodils on either side of me, the kids up ahead laughing together in the sunshine. I am walking and I am taking in a few big breaths of the cool afternoon air, and I am not missing the cardboard box situation at all, and I am thinking of the things I love. I love military rows of daffodils and those weird verandas of orange fungi that grow sideways out of tree trunks. And I love science and wattle birds and audio books and whoever thought to build a cafe at the bottom of the hill in the Fitzroy Gardens. I love the big, beautiful trees that are older than all of us and the tiny little bursts of new growth sneaking out between bricks to spite us. I love Boston buns and those people who do lively sign language at monotonous press conferences, and whoever the old lady is at the bottom of the hill engaged in conversation with my children, and being outside, and the Fitzroy Gardens, and you. Fun fact about the Fitzroy Gardens, they're actually in East Melbourne. The contrast to Fitzroy could not be more stark. In Fitzroy, you might hear someone say,
right. But I mean, what even is a resume-defining curatorial gig anymore?
Here in East Melbourne, though, in the Fitzroy Gardens, things are different.
Oh, it was an endotracheal intubation, Richard. But you get the idea. Quite right, quite right.
Even the ducks in the pond in the Fitzroy Gardens seem a bit posh. Long rows of them in decreasing size order, cutting perfect triangles across the surface of the water. I imagine there's a parks ranger they send around early in the morning, just to arrange them exactly. A distinguished gentleman in a pork pie hat heads up the hill towards me now, an amused lean indicating he's about to address me. He gestures down the hill towards my children with his walking stick.
Oh, so much energy,
he says, shaking his head. So much energy, I say to him, doing my best to perform being as exhausted as I in fact am, and he chuckles and points his walking stick towards me.
Good luck to you, my dear,
he says, the daffodils beaming up at him. At this point, by the way, the extent to which I can be said to be supervising my children is as follows. I can see, if I squint, their brightly coloured helmets way down the bottom of the hill, circling each other in figures of eight, chatting to several clusters of people. No idea who, but chances are it's a family of dentists, let's be honest. And I'm trotting down the hill now towards the crown in this unreconstructed white bread park. A tiny, pointy house called Cook's Cottage. A cottage to commemorate the man who is said to have discovered Australia, except he very much did not discover Australia, and it turns out he probably never lived in the cottage. A more culturally confused, accidentally satirical landmark would be hard to find, and today it crouches, locked and empty, guarded by hungry pigeons and angry magpies opposite the new cafe. The children, when I reach them, have avoided it completely, and nipped into one of the side gardens, scooters abandoned on the path before me, their wheels still spinning. I know vaguely where they've gone, but I can't see them exactly. And one of the dentists behind me says,
I wish I had that much energy.
Ha! Tell me about it. I say to her and her dentist husband. I have a scooter over each shoulder, like a gunslinging cowboy, as I head into the hinterland. When I reach the waterfall, constructed who knows when, out of cement and rock, there, right at the top of it, knee-deep in the water, gushing around them, are two brightly helmeted children squealing in delight.
At least they're burning off some energy,
says a dentist passing with a small fluffy dog.
They'll sleep well tonight.
And they won't. And it's everything I can do to drag them out of the Fitzroy Gardens they didn't want to go to and lead them, dripping and park drunk, through the streets of actual Fitzroy and home. Later, with poor Max finally home undertaking what amounts to be a nude press conference in the shower, peppered with questions and shouted non sequiturs from the children, one of whom is for some reason in rollerblades, I hurry up the street on borrowed time for an emergency litre of milk and, look, frankly, a chocolate frog. When I turn the corner, I'm surprised to see half a dozen people up ahead on the footpath outside the Indian restaurant, standing like human stepping stones towards the door in a kind of casual queue, scrolling on their phones while they wait for their meals. I tell you what, Tom, the delivery guy, might not be so good for the cardboard box situation, but I'm guessing he's at least partly responsible for the sudden popularity of the usually deserted restaurant. As I pass, two different neighbours look up from the queue and nod hello. On my way back from the shop, the queue is only three people long. Two of them are couples standing front on to the shop, looking at their reflections in the mirror. One of them fixes the other one's hair. She catches me in the reflection.
Oh, Chalky Frog,
she says. And I gesture with the wrapper, my mouth too full of the chocolate I am enjoying. I can't tell you how much.
You idiot.
Oh, what? I love a chalky frog, though.
As I walk home, I'm thinking that even though I only did one of the things I absolutely had to do today, even though I only had but 1 hour outside, it was an hour crowded with data, full of colour and light and things to notice and really kind people who probably weren't all dentists and two children whose energy was effortlessly absorbed by the height of the sky and the feeling of water and how steep the hill was and the wind in their hair. Back home, I see the square of light from our lounge room casting a wiggly rectangle over the bricks. And you know what? From out here, you can't even see we have a cardboard box situation. I ring the doorbell and I stand there listening. Somewhere to the north of here, muffled but lovely, somebody gently plays a guitar. Inside, I hear movement.
Coming! Oh my God, these boxes.
It's good to be home.